Good morning, Gamecock fans. Today is Friday, February 6th, the year of our Lord 2026. This is Coffee with JC Sherbert. Hope you're having a fantastic week. Apologies for no show yesterday, but I told you guys and gals, I guess, no, an earlier episode this week, there are going to be times in the coming weeks where there's not going to be a coffee. Got some things going on the business end that require my time. Also some things on the personal end that may require my time early in the morning. But I don't expect there to be too much interruption, but did want to give you a heads up on that. Don't freak out and think, oh, what's wrong with JC? Is he still doing it and all that good stuff? As you know, if you listen to me at all, there's a transition going on with, other parts of my career besides that and, our team at Chief Sports Network, quite frankly. And so we got to get it done, and sometimes that takes me away from talking with you folks, but it's okay. I appreciate everyone that does listen and watch on YouTube, and certainly, couldn't be more fired up about coffee as we kind of head into our second year here pretty soon, second season of coffee. I think this is episode 232. Started doing it last January, February. It's been about a year, and certainly love doing it, and surprised that could make it through a calendar year doing football every day, right? One sport. So basically, the one time I did talk basketball the whole show, nobody listened. So if you want my basketball and baseball takes, tune into Inside the Gamecocks, the show later today, which, by the way, starting at noon, Matt Anderson, the late night Gamecock, is going to be in with us with Phil, the Mad Dog Mullinax, and myself. And we're going to welcome in Deputy Smitty, the viral sensation, Deputy Smitty. Cameron Smith breaks down film, has a great YouTube channel, and great social media takes. You've probably seen him break down players, Carolina Panthers stuff, Xavier Leggett, a lot of Gamecock stuff. He used to coach. He has a lot of credibility. Plus, he's from Spartanburg, my hometown. So really like the guy, and we had him in for a special over the break, and he's going to rejoin us to kind of give his thoughts on some of these transfer portal players. I'm really curious. I saw his breakdown of Jacarius Peak, and I thought that was outstanding and actually exciting in a way to kind of watch what Peak can do out there at left tackle, frankly. And he's starting to pop up. I didn't realize this. He was on Feldman's freaks list. I didn't know that. I guess it got lost on me. But certainly that's a guy that can come in and solidify things at least one position on the offensive line, most likely left tackle. But I'm looking forward to getting his take on the other players that are in the portal class. I know he watches film like nobody else. Certainly better than me at breaking down film from a scheme standpoint and a, specific play. I mean, he coached, so he knows. And unlike me, who can't put anything together from IKEA because I can't see in 3D, he can see the field. And I mean, it's special. I'm talking to Deputy Smitty, special. And we're very pleased he's coming on today on the show. Bradford will be along with the morning show from 10 to 12. And Rafael Esparza will be in to tell you who to take with your Super Bowl props on Sunday. I know I'm going to be listening. Earlier than that, at 8:30, it's a new start time. They've been doing it for the last couple of weeks. Matt Smith and Steve Hall on Four Quarter Friday. They're going to welcome Lane Fowler, Burns High boys basketball coach, and a couple of other guests will be in. I think the Crestwood athletic director's in to talk more about this realignment and all the things going on at South Carolina High School Sports. Please follow their YouTube channel at Four Quarter Friday Chief. Go hit that subscribe button there. Boy, it's really grown in just the last week or two. So there is definitely an appetite for high school sports in South Carolina and here on the Chief Sports Network. We appreciate that. Sports Talk tonight, streaming 6 to 8. And then the late night Gamecock show and SEC Sunday night, because of the Super Bowl, those shows will air Monday night on our app and on our social channels and podcast by probably Tuesday on both of those things. So there's the house cleaning, the morning announcements, if you will, for today. The Gamecock softball team lost yesterday, 8-4. I saw my man Steven on X, maybe laughing about it. I don't know. I think he's being sarcastic. trying to take on the persona of an outraged fan. It's the diamond sports, man. You're going to take an L sometimes. You always want to win the opener, and I know it was disappointing, but and it's a season of great expectations, so we'll see. They'll rally. They have another game day. It's an invitational tournament. And so we'll see kind of what happens there. The Hokies were ranked, so that's that. The women's basketball team did win pretty well. Mississippi State, since beating them for the national championship, they've fallen off a bit. 88-45, Gamecocks rolled over the Bulldogs, and they look like they're hitting full speed heading into Sunday's super matchup against the Tennessee Lady Vols. ABC will be televising that one from the Colonial Life Arena. And then next Saturday, they're calling Baton Rouge, heading down to play Kim Mulkey and the LSU Tigers and former teammate Malaysia Fulwiley. ABC will do that one too, and I believe game day is going to be there. So it's a big stretch for Dawn Staley and her team coming up here in the coming weeks. And we certainly wish those teams all the best. Opening day for baseball is 1 week, and we'll have a combined show that day, like we always do. Same live from Founders Park, all that. The Northern Kentucky Norse come in. And so there we go. And by the way, Bradford did report yesterday on X that some of the injury situations that people are out there panicking about for the baseball team, he said essentially it's not as bad as people are letting it on. So we'll see what happens with that team. Certainly, there's a hope that they outperform very low expectations, picked 15th out of 16th in the SEC by the coaches. So, with all that's going on today, it's not going to be the longest episode of Coffee, but I did want to get one in. And dog stats. Really like this X account. This guy, I think it's Speakeasy Sports, Big Easy. I didn't. There's a website attached. I think Speakeasy Sports. I admire people like my boy Matt Anderson in basketball, the analytic guy. I like doing that too, but it's time consuming. And I don't know that I have the exact. I don't think I have the patience to sit there and count snaps or compile data, but maybe you get it from PFF or whatever. Anyway, SEC Stat Cat too, who's with On Three right now. He does a really good job with all that. And he digs into it too. Breaks down analytic drop back passes and all this good stuff as well. But according to Dog Stats, South Carolina, as far as returning production goes, overall offense, defense, offensive line snaps, whatever, number one in the country. So there's a more experienced football team, snap count wise, in Columbia, South Carolina, than any other football program in the FBS, on the FBS level. It can be a good thing. Does it mean instant winning? No. But they did emphasize getting players in here that have experience at whatever level that are older. And I think it's a sound strategy. I don't ever think that in college football, but it happens. In college football, based on 1 year, 1 year's worth of data, because most teams only play 13 games if they make a bowl, and then 12 if they don't. That's not a lot of games, So sometimes it's hard to tell if a team's good 1 year and there are tangible reasons why they win. It's easy to sit there and mimic it, right? Easy to sit there and mimic what they're doing. Well, they're doing that, so we'll do it. And it happens in college football. I don't think that Shane Beamer necessarily mimicked Indiana here. That is all the talk. I mean, and I think also Indiana being older was kind of a reason to explain why they win, because people aren't going to let go of the fact that they only had 7 5 stars or whatever. They had good football players on that team. And, they're old again next year. I'm going to read that off here in a second. So we'll see if that continues, if it's just being old, or is it Well, no, these guys all were really good. Then they developed them, and then they played harder than everybody in the country. They were more motivated than everybody in the country. I know for a fact, Fernando Mendoza and all the stars on that team, they weren't making as much as Casey Concepcion at A&M or Jeremiah Smith at Ohio State or Carson Beck at Miami. I mean, individually, no. So, and I wonder, and I'm the same way. I do think when you watch some of these teams play, not named Indiana this year in the playoff or otherwise, it's not 100% they go out there and hustle and play hard like that other team did. But I still maintain, and I'll use the example of the service academies, those guys play hard and play assignment football and are in the right position every single game. Then they'll run into Notre Dame and get squashed, So you do have to have talent. I mean, Indiana did not have talent, they would not have gone 16-0. I mean, you look at the quote unquote talent rankings, and this is why I think ranking a roster based solely on high school recruiting rankings is bunk. I don't think it tells you much of anything other than over time, we've won our share of recruiting battles. Maybe. With the portal now, you get a lot of 4 and 5 stars that aren't as good as the non-ranked guy you brought up from the lower level. And that's just player comparison, development process, and all that. However, it's Indiana's like 30 something, and Oregon's up there at the top. Oregon always recruits well. Dan Lanning's a really, really good coach. Indiana was far more ready to play than Oregon in that game from the start. Heisman Trophy winner Dante Moore threw a pass out there, an out first play of the game, like he was at 7-on-7 practice. I saw their lineman on loaf and slow down, chasing a guy into the end zone. I mean, and it a lot of talented NFL guys on that team. At the same time, if there's a huge talent gap, right? Service Academy, loaf or not loaf. And even if there are other teams playing the option or something, that team with more talent's going to win. I mean, that's just how football goes. And it's not like, when we talk talent gap, I'm talking significant. I'm not talking like, so South Carolina would probably last season have had played, gosh, 3 or 4 teams that had a decent sized talent gap. And they were in the game with all those. The one team, when you're just talking about pure talent, that beat them pretty good was Vanderbilt. And South Carolina probably had a player for player advantage in that one, if you're just talking about individual talents. It's a team sport. So, anyway, I don't know that, given all those factors with Indiana, I don't know that everybody should just jump on, well, oh God, we got to get older all of a sudden. I don't know that it's not a magic bullet or something you should do. I don't know that it is. We're not far enough into the era of transfer portal, NIL, and 12-team college football playoff, I think, to determine that. Because last year, it was older as well. But the whole theme of last season after Ohio State won it was, it's better not to go portal heavy because they got 6 guys out of the portal. And four of them were studs at Ohio. Three were studs. One was their quarterback. One was Keenan Nelson Jr., who has since moved on. But, so everybody was talking last year. And that's why Clemson and Penn State were ranked highly because they had a lot of guys that they had signed from the high school level that they had developed. And you looked at the roster and you're like, oh, it's kind of like Ohio State. Turns out it's not, but that's just kind of. I think it's when we're all trying to figure this out, this new era and what works and what doesn't. We tend to just gravitate to recency bias, and so I don't know that it's necessarily true that you need to be older to win. I know it's true in college basketball, but we have college basketball went transfer crazy before there was a portal. And you have the one and done rule in college basketball. So you have a lot of teams that are highly seeded, and then the pressure gets to the young players. I mean, the Fab Five did not win a national championship at Michigan. Remember, Kentucky went undefeated and lost to Wisconsin in the Final Four. It's not all. It hasn't always. There's examples, specifically that you can point to where Villanova had those teams that under Jay Wright that won it all. They were older team. So it's you can say that in college basketball, and especially with the way that's a tournament sport and all that, older teams tend to handle the NCAA tournament better. In football, I just don't know. I don't know that it's true yet. It was true last year. Miami was older. Indiana was older. Ole Miss was somewhat older, especially on offense. Defensively, not so much. But yeah, I mean, you look at it, there were some older teams. Shane Beamer mentioned it. Alabama was older, made the playoff. So it was one of those things where Georgia was not. Although Georgia is lower in the SEC as far as returning snaps and things like that go. They lose great players every year, and they just have guys behind them. So I don't know that it's necessarily going to be something that you look at and you go, well, this automatically means winning. I think there's a lot to what needs to happen for the Gamecocks to have a successful season in 2026. That said, it's kind of like recruiting rankings. You'd rather have them high than low because the odds are it gives you a better chance. This is particularly true on the offensive line, where it is a fact that older offensive lines with more snaps tend to perform better collectively and individually. It's such a hard position to play. It's developmental. There's no glory in it. Nobody ever talks about you on the offensive line unless you screw up. So there's not a lot of positive reinforcement. I mean, it takes a mindset to go out there and play. And so I think that's good. And South Carolina has, I think Virginia and South Carolina have the two highest number of career snaps up front on the offensive line, returning. I did read something where defensive snaps returning may not necessarily be a good thing because you want your defense to play less snaps and get off the field. But on offense, it matters. But that's a team thing and maybe not even as relevant when we're talking about experience. So, 10,324 career offensive line snaps are returning for South Carolina. Obviously, was not all at South Carolina. In fact, the large majority of these guys are coming from other places. So there's a gel and all that. Now, Beamer did say in the press conference as well that these guys play with an edge. I spoke on that at the end of the show. I think if they do go play with an edge in games, that's refreshing and different. There is a fundamental change. Because I don't know the last year that happened, especially given the, with the whole five. Or as I like to say, collectively. So that's good. And then the rest of the returning production is up there as well. On defense, South Carolina's 38th in returning production in FBS. That makes sense. You lost Kilgore. He rarely came off the field. Cisse rarely came off the field. Nick Barrett and Monkel Goodwin played a ton of snaps. So there's kind of a little bit of a rebuild going on. I think the positive part of it is, South Carolina was pretty young at linebacker last year, and Justin O and Fred Johnson and Sean Murphy, who came into his own at the end, all those three guys are back. So you're actually going from being kind of green at that spot, and you could tell at times, to having a year under your belt to where all three guys can make a snap, a step forward. I think that's really good. Also impacted the defensive numbers probably were snaps missed by Dylan Stewart down the stretch because of injury and things like that. And then you had Brian Thomas Jr. on the other end, plus JT Gear, plus Desmond. So all your edge snaps outside of Dylan Stewart that were on the team are gone. You did get Kelby Collins and Caleb Herring in, though, who played a lot. So it's going to be interesting. But overall roster, offense, defense, South Carolina is, according to snaps played, the most experienced team in the country. Behind them, it's interesting. South Carolina is one of two schools in the top 10. Virginia is right after them. Virginia's got a bunch of offensive line starts returning. Nebraska as well, same thing. West Virginia, Pittsburgh. I wonder what that Pitt offensive line is going to look like next year because they kind of are right there. And offensive line heaven in Western PA and Ohio. I need to go check that out just for poops and giggles, to, for my own sick college football obsession. Number six, are you ready? Are we ready for this? Because it's the only playoff team listed, the Indiana Hoosiers. Interesting, right? I think a lot of folks were talking about, they're gonna come back to Earth next year and all that. They're number six in production, and the offensive line, which I thought was a million times better between, they got a million times better between 2024 and 2025. I think they're all back, including their All-American guy at left tackle. Oklahoma State, this is interesting. They got a new coach, hired the guy from North Texas. He brought a bunch of North Texas players with him, including the quarterback. But they went out and got more experienced because they lost a bunch of players too when Gundy left. They were in a serious state of transition. They're seventh. BYU is eighth. Ooh, Big 12. Big 12. Look, BYU being experienced is crazy because their roster's always older because of the LDS Mormon Church. A lot of their players, don't come to college right away out of high school. They go on a 2-year mission, come back. So they always, BYU has always, they don't have to sue for extra eligibility to be 25 and playing for the Cougars. That could be something to look out for with BYU. Plus, Bear Bachmeyer is back and not a freshman anymore. I like him. My wife loves him because he's Thai, half Thai. Only Thai quarterback I can remember. Cal, with a new coach, Tosh Lupoy takes over number nine, and then Kentucky's number 10. A lot of snaps played. Now, I just listed off 10 teams. There weren't very many that were very good last year. Virginia was. They almost made the playoff. Oh, Pitt made a bowl. They kind of got rolled by Miami and Notre Dame late. Indiana obviously won the national championship. BYU, nearly a playoff team. West Virginia, disappointing under Rich Rod's first year back. Not disappointing, rebuilding, I would say. They had a good portal haul, though. I mentioned Oklahoma State. They were terrible last season. BYU, again, was good. Cal was okay, but ended up making a coaching change. And then Kentucky obviously also made a coaching change. So there are a lot of coaching change teams in Oklahoma State, Cal, and Kentucky right there in the top 10. In the SEC, South Carolina number one with returning experience, snaps played. Number two is Kentucky. Three is Oklahoma. Four is Tennessee. Oklahoma's a playoff team. Five, LSU. A lot of that came out of the portal, but a lot of guys are coming back. Six, Texas. Seven is Arkansas. Eight, Alabama, even though their defense is a different story. Nine, Florida. Florida had a lot of good young players that some are all retained. So that's going to be interesting. The Gators are an intriguing team yet again. How many off seasons have we said that? And by the way, they scheduled South Carolina for homecoming next year. And I wouldn't take offense at it because South Carolina scheduled Alabama for homecoming last season. The homecoming Patsy game, I think, especially with a 9-game SEC schedule, it's going to be hard to do. Georgia's 10th, which is a little surprising. I think they've lost some offensive linemen and all that, but they've got such a good rotation on defense that a lot of guys played and all that. I think Georgia is going to be really good next year. And then just three more: Auburn's 11th, Ole Miss 12th, Mississippi State 13th, and I didn't catch the bottom three. But yeah, so you look at it: South Carolina, Kentucky struggled. Oklahoma made the playoff. Tennessee was a solid 8-5. LSU was what, 9-4. 8-5. Texas almost made the playoff. Arkansas was bad. Bama made the playoff. So that just kind of gives you an idea of the SEC teams and their returning snap count. Now, what does this mean? South Carolina and Kentucky are going to play in Atlanta? No. I've spent some time here telling you why you shouldn't crown them right now, but I'm going to tell you why it is beneficial and it works. Outside of the offensive line, number one, you get better at the sport of football by playing football. And I'm not saying you don't get better in practice and you can't get better physically in the off season and improve, because that's true. Those things are all important. But what helps you the most is getting on the field against another opponent and knowing what's going on. I mean, it's kind of chaotic if you think about it. You're one of 11 guys. You got to do your job. And you know, sometimes you got other responsibilities. You got to make sure that people are doing their job at certain positions. You got to execute. You got to read your keys on defense. You got to run the play on offense. I mean, it's human nature that the more you experience that fast-moving chaos, the more it slows down for you. You've heard the term, the game slowing down for him. And that's just about in any sport, but especially in football. That's why coaches don't like to play freshmen. Now, some freshmen adapt quicker than others. Again, human nature. That's just life. Everybody's different. So you have guys that have been in the battles. And that's beneficial from that standpoint. Just kind of, okay, I'm used to this. I'm just going to go. I'm going to be able to go out and do my job, right? As Beamer pointed out, you still have to have talent. You know, if you can't run and you're slow, it doesn't matter. You know, that was kind of my point about Indiana. Their players weren't slow. I mean, and they were always in the right position. But if, it doesn't matter what position if you're in. If you're weak and slow compared to the other guy, they're going to run you over. They're going to run by you defensively, offensively. You're not going to get very far, even if you have blocking. So you do have to have talent and athleticism and all the things we talk about. But, you know, it does mean that when you get into the games, people are used to it. There's no wide-eyed moment most of your players. And it's not to say that, you know, Carolina's not going to start any freshmen next year, because I actually think probably one, maybe more, will start. But those guys have to work to get on the field and make the coaches comfortable, all that good stuff. Number two, Beamer mentioned leadership. And a lot of folks did say this team last year lacked leadership. I think that's probably true. But it sounds like it's derogatory, like none of these guys are leaders, or like you're just kind of attacking the personalities of the players or whatnot. I don't know. It's probably not an uncomfortable thing. I cringe a little bit when I hear no leadership, because it sounds like they don't care. And there's a difference between being a natural leader and a verbal leader, and a guy that doesn't, and then the opposite of that is not the guy that doesn't care. It's just the guy that's not his thing. There's great football players that aren't natural leaders, great ones. So, you know, I think they missed Demetrius Knight a bit on defense, and you know, maybe Demetrius Knight overall, you know, just from a leadership standpoint and being older, you know, that kind of thing. You're older, you're a little wiser, you know, and you can get the young guys to go up. So being older does help your leadership and helps too. The third part of that, and this has to do with leadership, Beamer keeps mentioning it over and over, and it is a fact that South Carolina was in a lot of close games last year and could not close the deal. Experience and leadership, the two things I just mentioned, that helps. Teams that have that when it's good, they find ways to win. And it's because they don't get nervous. They don't get rattled. You know, so I think that there'll probably be a lot of competitive games next year, close ones. And so this will help having older players. So there are a lot of positives to it. I just wanted to say that I did not think that the idea, and Beamer was asked this, that the idea was we're just going to go full Indiana, because this is not something Shane Beamer just watched the national championship game and decided to do. Quite the opposite. The portal class was mostly done by the time the national championship game came on. And he mentioned last offseason that it was kind of a younger group than it was the previous year. And if you look at the 2024 portal class, they brought in a lot of older players, you know, and you look at this year's, and it's, I don't know how it will turn out as far as impact. That's different. That's not going to be determined until probably October, but it is the traits of this. It's an older group. And then the offensive line too. I think that getting new guys in there and then them also being older, that's going to help their performance, in my opinion, because when you struggle as much as the previous group did, and then a new coach comes in, yeah, great. They'll get behind it. It'll be good. But then the minute adversity strikes, which I'm going to tell you, there'll be a lot of adversity on the offensive line. There is at every SEC program when they're in league play because the defensive lines are so good. I can't say that enough. It's not that the adversity won't happen. It's not that somebody won't miss a block and there'll be a sack or get blown up in the backfield. Hopefully not, what, 45 times sack-wise. But it's how you respond. And I think older players that have been in the wars before aren't going to panic and let things snowball maybe as much as a guy that hasn't played a whole lot that's out there beating himself up snap after snap. On the offensive line. Plus, for those that, talk about the coaching aspect of different coach. So whatever coaching was happening last year, it's going to be different this year. And it's a guy that's got a long track record coaching offensive line in this offense. So I think it's good to be older. I think that be careful thinking it's a magic bullet. Be careful thinking that Beamer and Darren Usher and everybody were just out there copying Indiana because that book wasn't written yet when they said, hey, we need to get older. This has been talked about for a long time at South Carolina. So, maybe Beamer's on the cutting edge. And if you're going to ask me why the last portal class was a little younger, and I don't have an answer, it probably has to do with the roster breakdown. But well, the good part of that is you have Brownlow, Dende, Pikes, Murphy back that you got out of the portal last year. So that's a pretty solid thing, in my opinion. So we will see what happens. All right, don't forget Four Quarter Friday coming up 8:30. Then the morning show, Rafael Esparza, Stuart Lake, and the show, Deputy Smitty, Matt Anderson are in with Mad Dog and I. Sports Talk tonight, 6 to 8. Thank you for listening to Coffee. It's been a great week. Big things happening, folks. It's JC Sherbert signing off. Oh, by the way, no coffee on Monday. It should be a national holiday because day after Super Bowl, right? So that'll be another one I miss. I got a meeting scheduled for that morning, but we'll be back Tuesday on Coffee. How about that? All right. See you guys. Holla.